It's Mark Sams here from Ninja Outreach, and you know what we do. We're here today, as I always do. I do a ton of outreach, and I find some great experts, entrepreneurs, business owners who are stomping the ground, making it happen. And today is no different. Today we have Dave Waring, who is one of the founders of FitSmallBusiness.com. And we're going to be talking about his journey. We're going to be going through like how he's actually built that business up and really sort of understand some of the ins and outs and some key sort of strategies and action points that you guys can take away to help you build your brand and your business. So, Dave, how are you doing?
Doing great. Thanks for having me, Mark.
It's a pleasure. It's absolute pleasure. Absolute pleasure. Okay, so I want to get straight into this. No messing around. So, Dave, like, the first thing I want to sort of do is I want to give the audience a bit of a background on who you are. Like, before you started FitSmallBusiness.com, like, what was you doing before that? Like, was you running some other businesses? Like, basically, what was happening before that that led to this business?
Sure. So I grew up in a small town in North Carolina, went to college in North Carolina, but I always wanted to work in finance. So, you know, after I graduated from college with a degree in corporate finance, I moved to the big city. And before that, I'd only ever been to New York City one time in my life. So it was pretty overwhelming at first, but I was lucky enough to get a job at a firm that had built an electronic platform for trading foreign exchange. And that ended up being an amazing 7-year run. During the time that I was there, that company grew from 9 to over 700 employees. And my position and responsibilities, you know, really expanded along with the company. I went from just doing basic customer service and technical support type stuff to actually running their sales team. And before I left, I had about 200 salespeople that rolled up to me.
Let me stop you there just for a sec. So you've gone and worked for a company and you're starting off as customer support, which is no disrespect to anybody as customer support, but that's low level work, right? Like, that's the basic sort of like rate of work. And you're moving up. You moved up to a top position within the company. Talk to me about your mindset and what sort of like where the ways you built relationships that allowed you to get to a much higher position within that company.
Sure. So, you know, my how I thought New York would be is, you know, I would have to come up here and sort of get a job sweeping the floor. And then, you know, one day the big boss would recognize me and I'd get a few minutes with him. And, you know, that was my impression of what, you know, working in finance in New York was like. Mm-hmm. But when I got here, you know, what I actually found is that, you know, if you were hungry and you're willing to, you know, take the lower level stuff, you know, to start off with as an entry level person, that people recognize hard work here and you can move up the ladder very, very quickly. And of course, it also helped that the company was growing very quickly. Mm-hmm. But if there's one piece of main advice that I can tell people from that experience, and this has been true throughout my career, is you always need to be looking for opportunities to take on. Well, first of all, you need to be doing your job well and what you've been assigned well. But mm-hmm. in addition to that, you always need to be looking, you know, for other things that you can take on. And especially if you're working for a smaller company, there's always multiple things that you could potentially get involved with and help out. I think it was Zig Ziglar that said most people stop looking for work as soon as they find a job.
No, I love Zig Ziglar and his sayings. Like, that's a powerful quote right there.
Yeah. So, you know, don't stop looking for work once you get the job. That's just the beginning of your career. And trust that over time that if you do take on additional work and you do a good job and you're ambitious, that's going to get noticed. It may not happen overnight, but, you know, a few months of good hard work or a year and almost always without exception that gets noticed.
No, like, I can attest to that without a doubt, because like we've got people that like class as like virtual assistants within our business, and some of them are like, they're amazing, and you're literally right. Because they're amazing, you can't lose them, so you feel obliged, you feel you want to develop them and grow them, and they're in certain countries where they're fine to be on the wages that they're on, but now that we've sort of increased their wages and stuff like that, it's like it's really given them a better standard of life, and it's because they just work really hard and really and they think out of the box and they sort of go over and above sort of thing.
Yeah, definitely. And I would say, you know, if you're working for an owner of the business, like, you know, our people are working for us, you know, it's really easy to get on the radar. But if you're at a bigger company, don't let that discourage you from going in and talking to some of the senior level managers. Yeah. You know, very rarely people ever came to me when I was the head of sales that were 2-3 rungs. You know, down the ladder. And that was something that we encouraged, you know, their boss was not going to get mad at them if they came to talk to me or anything like that. And like I said, very rarely did anybody ever come in. And the times that they did, it really made a big impression on me.
No, of course. Okay. So you're working, so you're working in a nice big sort of corporation in New York. Like, why leave? Like, you've got a good position. Why are you going to go and risk it all and leave? What did you do next?
You know, during the time that I was there, like I said, the company was very, very successful and basically ended up having a $1 billion IPO, you know, and it was just watching, you know, the partners of that firm, you know, basically with the help of employees like myself, build the company up was an awesome experience. And I got to experience, it wasn't just sales and service that I was running. I got to dip my toes into a lot of the business development stuff, which is where I got my feet wet in internet marketing and that type of thing. Trading and that type of stuff. It was two things, really, to be honest with you. Number one, I've always wanted my own business, so that was always the plan. And number two, to be honest with you, I was kind of bored. I mean, I'd kind of done everything there, and you know, it wasn't that the company wasn't. It did continue to grow, but we weren't. You know, the early years that I was there, we were growing, you know, 5-10 times a year the size. And by that time, you know, once you're at that, you know, 700 employees, you know, it gets a little harder to maintain that growth rate.
No, of course. Okay. So what was the transition? What was the journey? Was it straight into like fitsmallbusiness.com?
No.
What were some of the things in between that? What happened?
So I started a business called informedtrades.com, which was an online community for global macro traders. So basically.
That makes sense that you was in trading and you've gone into, you've started a business and something related. Okay.
Yeah, so I built up this community with my business partner at the time, and you know, it was really like there was two things that I was interested in doing more of after my experience at FXCM. One was the trading stuff, and the two was I was really interested in internet business, because although FXCM is a currency trading firm, they're also an internet, you know, they were one of the pioneers in internet marketing. And one of the ways that they were able to grow so quickly was through search engine optimization, you know, being early on with PPC. At the time, we were one of the top 50 clients for Google, like that.
Oh, okay,
that's how
okay.
They're spending millions of dollars a month and that type of thing. So I was hungry to do more, you know, in the internet space.
A question that I was going to ask you is that, like, leaving a big corporation company, like, there's different sections within the company that handle different things. So like if you was like so what I was thinking is when you've started this what's it called, informed trades, what was your thought process like? Because obviously, did you already have the search engine optimization knowledge from working at the last company, or how did you sort of go about, because you said you started building this community, and it's easy enough to say you build a community, but like that's not an easy task.
Right. So, you know, we had some experience, but not a ton. But we tried a bunch of different things. And we dipped our toe in a bunch of different areas. And what we found was, this was in the early days of YouTube. And what we found was that at that time, there was not a whole lot of quality video content out there, especially around things like trading, right? Like there was people doing videos about a lot of different things, but, you know, it wasn't the, you know, I think now there's like 76 hours of video uploaded to YouTube every minute is the stats that I ran.
It gets higher all of the time. Like I've heard those stats. It's crazy.
But back then it was in the early days of YouTube. And so what we started doing was, we started putting out these training videos that, you know, there's all these companies that teach traders how to trade, and they're charging thousands of dollars, you know, for these videos. And we basically, you know, and mailing them out, you know, at that time, you know, DVD and that type of thing. Mm-hmm. Well, what we started doing is shooting these 5-minute lessons on all different parts of trading and uploading them to YouTube. And what we found was people really flipped out over that, because like I said, at the time, you know, that not only was that video not out there, but what was out there, people were paying a lot of money for. So the fact that we were putting it out for free on YouTube, you know, was a big deal. So we basically built that company, you know, millions of views on those videos. You know, at the time, we were definitely the number one finance channel on YouTube. And still today, that even though I'm not with left the business many years ago, you know, we have, you know, 30,000 subscribers. Those videos that I put out still get hundreds of thousands of views, that type of thing. And so I think the lesson for other entrepreneurs looking to get on the internet there that I learned is you do want to dip your toe in a bunch of different areas, but it's easy to get overwhelmed. So the point of dipping your toe in a bunch of different areas is not to go all in, right, on all these different marketing channels that are available to you. It's to find out where you can have some early success and then go all in on that one area. And what people will normally say is, oh, well, you don't want to put all your eggs in one basket. And what I always say is, well, if you only have one egg, like, you need to choose a basket.
Yes, I love it. I love it. That is perfect.
Yes. So we went all in on YouTube. And then, you know, we made sure that, you know, when people did come, you know, we had a very specific process for driving people to the website. You know, at the end of the video, we'd say, you know, please come join our community. There's a link under the video. There's more great, you know, videos there and everything. So we were basically leveraging YouTube's community and driving them to informtrades.com, our online community.
Okay. So
the second. Yeah, so the second big lesson that I learned there is banner advertising is a terrible way to monetize a website. Nobody goes to a website and says, hey, you know, I wish there was more, you know, this website's great, the content's awesome, but I wish there was more banner ads, right? Like, nobody ever says that. And for the advertiser, like, the click-through rate is horrible. I mean, I think a good click-through rate on a banner ad is like 0.2%.
Yeah, right.
It's like if two people out of every 1,000 people that see it click on it, like, that's a good click-through rate. So it's very difficult to make a lot of money with banner advertising, and that's why you see a lot of online publications going out of business. So what we did instead was, you know, we built up a brand for ourselves as, you know, being really good, high-quality education. And then we form partnerships with other firms that sort of fit our brand. So basically, we had trading courses on stocks, on futures, and on foreign exchange. Mm-hmm. And basically what we did was we chose one partner that we liked the best in each of those areas. And then we formed a relationship with them where we got paid for sending them leads. So basically, we had these free trading courses. And then as a part of the trading course, we would say, hey, follow along with us. You know, we're going to be using FXCM's currency trading platform. You can get a free demo with $50,000 in it by clicking the link below this video. So everybody that did that, the brokerage firms would pay us, you know, on a per lead basis. And when you're going to a company and you're saying, hey, you know, forget about we're going to be talking to everybody and having all these different banner ads on our site and these types of things. For this section of our site, like, it's going to be all about you. And if we're not successful, you don't have to pay us. You know, that's a powerful value proposition for them. And they're going to be willing to pay. Not only are they going to be much more willing to do a deal with a smaller site, right, than they would otherwise, mm-hmm. Because it's basically risk-free to them. But they're also going to pay you a whole lot more than what you're going to earn on a banner ad because, you know, they're actually know that they're getting something every time that they pay you. So yes, that is, you know, and so we monetize at probably 5 to 10 times, no exaggeration, what you can do with a banner ad by forming these types of partnerships. So that was the second big lesson that I think applies to any web publisher out there.
So let me dig into that a little bit. What I want to understand is that what made you – is it just something naturally within you that you felt, okay, we need to go and get partnerships versus following the herd of everybody else? Because everybody back then, was doing banner advertising and just trying to make it work, get more traffic, get more impressions and trying to make that work. Like, what made you – was it something that you was reading? Is it something that you learned from before? What made you know that – you need to create some strategic partnerships that could give you a better return on investment?
Very simply, you know, in addition to dealing with the sales for individual clients, you know, I also ran their business development department at FXCM, and I just saw how much more partners that worked with us on a performance basis were making than people that we were paying to advertise on their site via banner ads. It was just night and day. So I was lucky to have a piece of, you know, sort of inside information on how much more, you know, you could earn by being performance-based rather than just, you know, banner ad-based.
That's really cool. Okay. So...
And the other thing is, you know, the user loved that. There was like, here, they're getting, it's win-win-win, right? It's the user gets a free account that they can then, you know, trade on as they watch these videos, right? The broker gets a very highly qualified lead, and the publisher makes a lot more money than they would if they were using a subpar form of advertising.
Yeah, it makes complete sense. It makes complete sense. So why did you leave that business and what came next?
Yeah, you know, unfortunately, I just had a parting of ways with my business partner. Uh-huh. So, you know, even though the business was successful, you know, I decided that, hey, it's just I really just didn't want to be a part of it anymore. Mm-hmm. So that was a pretty, you know, low point in my life, you know, because even though the business was successful, I'd only been at it for about 2 years. And we've been putting all the money back into the company, you know, paying our living expenses off the business. But that's pretty much it. Yes. So it's not like I was putting a lot of money away in savings. So when I left there, you know, I was basically busted broke. Yeah. And I had to move home to North Carolina and live on my parents' couch, or not their couch, in my old bedroom.
Yeah.
So that was brutal.
So talk to me about that. Like, you've been working at a company, you built yourself up, then you went and started your own thing, and you built this up, and for whatever reason you decided to leave because like on sort of like bad terms, and you're now in a situation where things are a bit dire, and you're like, what do you do now? Like, how do you crawl out of that place? Like, how do you get yourself back? Like, because It must be very like hard when you've kind of touched a golden goose.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I, you know, first off, the you know, a big thing for me that I'm very lucky is that I had a place to go. You know, because if I didn't, you can see how even sometimes, you know, one time successful people, you know, can slide into a very difficult situation. You know, fast if they don't have sort of a safety net of family and friends that can help them out and those types of things.
Yeah, the reality is business is very risky.
Yeah, so you know, it was brutal, but you know, you just got to keep putting one foot in front of the other. You know, I'm a big quote fan, as you can see, and Winston Churchill said, I may misquote this a little bit, but something along the lines of, if you're going through hell, the main thing is keep going.
So
basically what I did was, you know, I still had friends in New York that I could stay with, you know, not, you know, for months at a time, but for, you know, a few days at a time type of thing. And so what I did was I used one of my friends' addresses on my resume, and I started sending out resumes to jobs in New York. And then when I got interviews, I would take the train up from North Carolina and go to the interviews. Mm-hmm. So again, luckily, you know, I had a pretty good reputation in finance. And even though I really enjoyed the internet stuff and that's what I wanted to get back into, I knew it would be a lot easier for me to get a job and that type of thing if I went back to doing something similar to what I was doing at FXCM, because that's where I built my reputation in finance. Mm-hmm. So I you know, got a job with, you know, another, this was an institutional trading platform, you know, similar to FXCM, but dealing with, you know, banks and hedge funds and those types of things in sales. And I came back up to New York and started working that job.
Okay. So how did FIP small business, like,
so,
that manifest?
Right. So I actually had two different jobs, you know, in the sort of 2 years in between Inform Trades and when I started my current company, which is called Mark Waring Ventures, which is the parent company of a fit small business. So initially, this was in late 2011 that my business partner and myself started this company. And basically, initially, my business partner, Mark Prosser, was the chief marketing officer at FXCM. I was the head of sales and head of business development. So we'd worked together all 7 years that I was at FXCM. In fact, he hired me initially. So he had stayed through the IPO, left, went to travel around Central and South America. And when he came back, you know, I'm like, listen, let's do something together. So, you know, we got together, and the main thing at that point was we didn't really have a big business idea, but we just knew we wanted to work together and work on something. And so, you know, we sort of put our heads together. And one of the things that we'd done, or, you know, while we were at FXCM, is built this site called dailyfx.com, right? So in addition to Informed Trades, you know, we built this dailyfx.com. And so we're like, listen, you know, let's think about that. And then also, he's been doing some angel investing. And one of the companies that he invested in was in the institutional bond trading market. And that market looks a lot like the FX market did 10 years ago. Like, the technology hasn't caught up there yet. So we were like, we might want to do something in the bond trading world. But in order to find out and sort of get a lay of the land, let's start a website first. That'll allow us to really learn about the market, and that'll also allow us to make some money. I can support myself, you know, off the revenues from that. So we started this site together called learnbonds.com, and it was all about bond market education and that type of thing. And we actually built that up to be the biggest bond education site, you know, on the internet. But after doing that for a year and a half or so, we decided, hey, you know, this can be a nice small business, but it's never going to be a big business, like you know, multi-million-dollar business. So we want to do something else. So basically, we sold that business, and we start. One of the mistakes that we made with Learn Bonds, which is funny because, you know, by this time, you know, we were SEO experts, is, you know, in the bond market, it's not very competitive. But there's not a lot of long tail search traffic. So if you're looking, you know, if you're Googling municipal bonds or treasury bonds or something like that, there's a lot of traffic around that. But when you look at things like bond market prices or how do I trade bonds, you know, that type of stuff, it just, the traffic drops off a cliff. So, you know, even though there wasn't a lot of competition out there, you know, the Wall Street Journal, the Financial Times, and publications like this are ranking for the main term. So it's going to be very difficult to rank there. So it was difficult to grow traffic. So after Learn Bonds, we took that lesson and we said, we want to go into something that we can use SEO to grow the business and has a lot of search traffic and a lot of long tail search traffic. And also, we want it to be something that we're passionate about, like we are finance and that type of thing. And so we looked at a bunch of different things, and what we settled on is, you know, we started multiple businesses by this point, and it's just, it's almost like in talking, you know, have a lot of entrepreneur friends. And as I'm sure you went through, it's like every time somebody sets out to start a business, it's almost like, you know, it's never been done before. You know, it's like everybody, it'd be like showing up to Mount Everest and going, okay, let's beat our way up the, you know, the thing. You know, it's like, it's not like there should be like a path, you know, a trail for this.
True.
Yeah. So basically, you know, we're taking another page from the Informed Trades playbook and saying, listen, let's put together an education site on small business. And when a lot of people heard that, they're like, oh, there's tons of sites out there about that. And if you're talking about online businesses or venture capital backed businesses, there are a ton of sites out there. But the average business is not an internet business or a venture capital backed business. You know, 95%+ of businesses are still offline businesses primarily. It doesn't say they don't have an online component or that the internet isn't important to them, but at the end of the day, they're primarily doing business face to face with people. Okay. So there's not a lot of websites out there that help brick and mortar businesses. Okay. So that was sort of the genesis of Fit Small Business, was we're going to put out all this educational content, you know, around how to start and run a brick and mortar small business. Not to say it wouldn't be applicable to online businesses as well, but primarily, you know, our core audience that we're targeting is the brick and mortar small business. So we launched that site in the middle of 2013, and you know, have been focused on that as our primary business ever since. And for the first year went well, growing fast, that type of thing. But you know, for the first year, we would put out basically one product review or recommendation, which is how we monetize the site, mm-hmm. for every four pieces of educational content. Right.
I see. Okay.
So we built, you know, we do the education, we give away all this great free education. Then when people trusted our information, we would give them a high quality, trustworthy product review and recommendation. Right.
So that kind of answers a question that I've got like later on down, but I'll ask it. And I was like, because I was like, when I was, as I was looking at the site and stuff like that, and I was looking, then I was using tools to find out what sort of traffic, and I could see that you guys are getting a good amount of traffic to the site. Mm-hmm. Like, I was like, first off, what made them go into this knowing that there's so many product review websites out there? It's like trying to go into the mortgage industry or something like that. Like, it's, there's so yep. many people throwing up. Then I thought to myself, well, they've done it and they've got results. So what made them stand out and made what was it about their brand that made people be interested in? You kind of answered that there, but maybe you've got more to put into it. Like, where you said you put three articles and then a review. So tell me more.
Yeah, I can see how you would think that, but what I'm going to – you'd be wrong.
Okay, cool. I was open to learn.
Which we were wrong, too, is the reason why. So what we found after a year was, surprisingly and a little disappointingly to me, to be honest with you, was that everybody was coming to the site for the product reviews. They weren't coming for the how-to information.
I see.
So, you know, and I mean, it was by a factor of like 10, right? And so I think, you know, one of the things that we did is, I mean, we would put like a week, if not weeks, into our product reviews. Like, we would really, and we still do, we really go and research it. We try out the products. We do interviews on the phone with the companies. We do interviews with users. We put out horror requests, all these types of things. Mm-hmm. So we write super in-depth product reviews and recommendations.
Okay.
And while there are a lot of product review and recommendations on the consumer side, there's less on the business side. It's still competitive, but it's nowhere near as competitive, you know, as the consumer side.
Mm-hmm.
So at the beginning of 2015, after, you know, sort of learning the lessons from, 2014 and late 2013, we basically switched over to primarily focusing on the product reviews and recommendations. And that's become sort of our main thing. You know, now that we have built that section out, you know, that we've got a whole lot of hundreds of product reviews and recommendations. I think we'll start doing more how-to content, but it's going to be more industry specific. I think one of the reasons why the how-to content was less popular than we thought it would be is because it was broadly focused and not, you know, here's how to do this if you're a realtor, for example. And some of the niche how-to content that we started to produce now is performing a lot better. So I think that's kind of the answer in terms of how we grow the site going forward.
Okay, so this is a question, I guess, to give some insight to the audience, that, like, since she was able to go into an industry which is crowded, would you agree that the product,
yes,
product reviews is crowded? You got into that industry and it's crowded, and you was able to stand out head and shoulders over the rest with your strategy. And I guess the strategy was to make sure that you was just more epic than everybody else by putting in that extra research, by spending a week on a product review. That's a lot of time. Like,
yeah,
most people are not prepared to do that. But
being that that's the case,
like, what advice would you have for business owners who have got their business and they want their marketing message to stand out? Like, what's the mindset? What should be their approach? What sort of insight can you give into that?
Sure. So, you know, it's difficult, a little difficult. I want to be careful here because, you know, by the time we launched Fit Small Business, we were very experienced, so very ready to deal with a competitive market.
Yeah.
But at the same time, you know, if there's not anybody doing anything in the space, I'm not saying that it's a bad space to be in, but, you know, you got to wonder why. You know, like, there's – there's billions of websites now, like, and there's nobody that's discovered this space. I'm not saying you're never going to come across that, but if you do, it's probably a relatively small market. Right.
Okay.
And like you said, just like with, you know, the job stuff that we were talking about earlier, like most people are not willing to put in the extra mile. Right. Mm-hmm. And it, you know, if you look at things and you know, when you look at the space, if it's competitive, that's not necessarily a bad sign. There may be a lot going on there. But I think the key is, can you identify something to set yourself apart? Right. That you think will really resonate with users. And for us, most of the product reviews and recommendation sites that are out there that are doing a lot of different categories, they're focused more on user reviews. And so for if we're talking about a restaurant, like you're talking about Yelp or something like that,
mm-hmm.
You know, I think anybody can go into a restaurant and basically what people care about is, you know, how's the pricing, you know, how's the ambiance, you know, that, you know, how's the food, yeah. Right? That's pretty easy to write a review about. Mm-hmm. But if you're talking about, you know, CRM software, like what small business owner or user is going to have tried like 10 or 12 different of the top CRM softwares, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
They're not going to have done that. So they don't, the product reviews and recommendations from users are not as good. Like if you just, if you kind of want to find out, hey, I'm already interested in Salesforce or Insightly, then you go and you can look at user reviews and see what existing users think. But if you're just like, I need a CRM package, like user reviews are not going to be very helpful to you. Like you need an expert that's going to give you an overview of the different options that are available and an in-depth comparison that after reading, you can be confident enough in to make a decision. And we've recognized that as an opportunity to stand out and luckily the users have as well.
Excellent. Okay, so I've always found that there's been certain people in my business journey that have like had a profound impact in a positive way on my journey, like, and through this interview, you've mentioned a few quotes of different people, like, well, what sort of people have had that same sort of effect on you, if any?
Yeah, I mean, definitely my father, you know, got me thinking about being an entrepreneur very early on. And, mm-hmm. you know, we would go, like, I can remember, like, crawling through trash cans when I was, like, 10 years old, collecting aluminum cans. And then I would cut lawns and he would carry me around and drop me off of my lawnmower and that type of thing. So he really got me in the mindset of, you know, and I was making, you know, for a young person, a whole lot of money, you know, doing those types of things. So, you know, he really showed me early on that if you're willing to take some risk and do your own thing, that you're going to, you know, do a lot better than people that are not willing to do that. So definitely my father is number one. Secondly, you know, my whole experience at FXCM and their CEO there. You know, he really took me under his wing when I was in New York, and I got to work very, very closely with him, especially in the early days, and, you know, continued to be, you know, one of two or three people that were closest to him at that company. So that was definitely a big influence. And my business partner who I had a falling out with, actually, you know, he was a very big picture, you know, big idea type of person. And so he really helped, you know, get me in the mindset of thinking about like really big ideas.
Okay, excellent. Okay, so what would you say that you know now that you wish you knew when you first started?
Well, from my first business, I can tell you the biggest thing was you need to have a partnership agreement in place, a good partnership agreement. So
This,
even if you know for certain that you're never going to have a falling out with your business partner, just the act of putting together the partnership agreement helps you think about who's going to be handling what, how you're going to handle different situations if someone dies or decides that they want to leave the business or, you know, those types. It's not only about resolving fights. It's also just about, you know, the normal day-to-day operations of the business and thinking through those things before you actually get into the act of doing it. Because when you're in the mud, so to speak, it's much harder to make those decisions than it is when you're looking at things with sort of a fresh, you know, out of the mud perspective.
I can't believe you said that because like, we've been, I guess, in business now for like from development to obviously selling and so on and so forth for about a year. And it's only just now that we've all realized that we need to do vested equity. And it might make us sound naive, but like we were just in it to make to get this business going and so on and so forth. And it's like now we've just realized that, okay, we actually need to do vested equity, because there's certain changes within the dynamic within the group, and that's the only way that it's going to be fair moving forward. And again, like you say, it also protects you. Like if somebody decides to walk away, like if something happens to somebody, like it does protect, it does protect the business, really. And it puts you in a position that makes you more favorable to investors and stuff like that as well, versus just saying, oh, we're all equal partners and we're going to be friends forever sort of thing.
Yeah, that's right. So that's right.
I definitely, like when you say that, like I was like, wow, that's so interesting. I've literally just recently just put together new terms around that whole cap structure.
Yep. And then the other thing is, you know, you're going to be trying 10 things for every one that works. So, you know, you have to be willing to make a lot of mistakes and do a lot of things, which in hindsight, you know, may look dumb, or you can't believe you did. But, you know, the difference between the successful entrepreneurs and the unsuccessful is the successful are a big difference is the successful are willing to make those mistakes, learn from them, move on and keep trying new things and learning, you know, as they go along. So I guess the second biggest thing, and this was something that I learned from my first company, but I still think it's a good lesson, is, you know, you have the idea, put things out there, dip your toe into the water, and then iterate, you know, based off of the feedback that you get. Mm-hmm. You know, way too many people are like, I'm going to spend the next 2 years developing this amazing product or service, and then I'm going to launch and it's going to be a big splash and all this type of stuff. Like, that's just not how it happens. You know, you need to gather user feedback, see if the problem that you've identified that your product or service is going to be solving is a real problem and resonates with people, and most importantly, that they're willing to pay for, or there's some other way for you to monetize. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, put out a minimum viable product. You know what I mean?
We never do 100%.
Even with Fit Small Business, when we had money, a lot of money to invest if we wanted to in the new design and everything, we just started out with a basic WordPress theme, started putting content out, you know, started showing it to people and that type of stuff. You know, we didn't invest, you know, $20,000 in a professional site design and then, you know, write all this content in stealth mode and then have a big splash, right? We just basically started blogging to the point where non-entrepreneurs who don't get that would have looked at what we were doing and been like, these guys aren't serious. Like, what is this? You know what I mean? No, there's no way. In fact, my accountant, when we started Learn Bonds, I'll never forget this. I said, you know, I've started another business. He's like, well, what are you guys going to be doing? And I was like, we're going to be blogging about the bond market. And he's like, well, why do you need a business to do that?
Some people don't understand how powerful content marketing is.
You're right.
They just don't get it. Like, wow. Okay. Well, talking about content marketing, like, so you've put together, like, you've spent a week of research and interviewing, like, the founders of a particular software, and you've done some interviews with customers and stuff like that, gone on Harrow, and you put together an amazing review, like, great images, like, it's really good. It's a top-notch review on a particular software. You press publish. Now, what do you do to promote that review to get the traffic in?
Spend at least as much time promoting that piece of content as you did writing it. I mean, that's the mistake that people make, is they think that, you know, if they build it, they will come. Mm-hmm. And that's not true until you already have an existing follower a group of followers that's already there, right? And it's not that you built it and they came, it's you built it and they were already there.
That's very true.
Yeah. So you really have to promote the content that you're putting out. And you know, if you've talked to a lot of people to put together a piece of content, you know, you have a great existing list of people to reach out to and say, hey, you know, we put your quote in. You know, would you mind linking to it? Would you mind putting a tweet out, sharing it on your Facebook, that type of thing? Mm-hmm. You know, if you know, create a badge for the people that won a particular thing, or made a list, or that type of thing, and reach out to them. And this is where, you know, I was looking at the video of your software before we got on the call, and it looks like it's, you know, tailor made for doing that type of outreach. So
it basically, definitely is, yeah, without a doubt.
Yeah. Yeah, leveraging, you know, those types of things. And then, you know, in addition to just, you know, focusing on promoting that piece of content, you need to be focused on just building your name in the industry in general, right? And one of the things that I think
Yeah,
nobody
tell me more
does,
about that.
yeah, you need to, you know, there's the short term, there's a short game and then there's a long game, right? The short game is, you know, you've mentioned somebody in an article, you want to reach out to them, that type of thing, right? The long game is, you know, we're in the small business product and service space, right? And so we want to be constantly connecting and networking with other people that are in this
Of
space, right?
course.
And surprisingly, again, you know, one of the best ways to connect with people, as we're doing right here, is to actually talk with people on the phone or do an interview or that type of stuff. Getting people, you know, on the phone and meeting with people or meeting with people in person is still by far the most effective ways to build these types of relationships. It's not to say don't do email outreach. It's not to say don't interact with people on social media, but the most powerful thing you can do is pick up the phone and talk to somebody.
Definitely. Like, I think I've read something somewhere where they talk about, so like obviously email, it's just text based and visual, where like if you're talking, when you're using your different senses, and then like when you're in front of somebody, you're using like body language, your voice, like tonality, like just there's so many different things that are that create that, build that rapport. So that's why they say that field salespeople that actually go out and meet clients face to face, they get the highest conversion rate, and it works all the way backwards back to the person that sending out emails, making the telephone calls, and so on and so forth.
And I would say, you know, we do a lot of email outreach too, even though it's not quite, you know, as powerful. But you know, you need to differentiate yourself. So, you know, I get now that the site is pretty big, you know, we get probably 5 to 10 people reaching out to each of us a day. And very rarely is it someone say, hey, you know, I came across Fit Small Business. You know, I really like this product review. You know, we have, you know, we're in this space. Like, how about a chat? Not, they're always asking me to do something. You know what I mean? And you need to give something, you know, before you get. So, hey, you know, I saw this. I shared it on our social media account. You know, got some traffic from
Engagement,
that here, right? You know, how about a quick phone call? Let's see if there's some synergies or whatever. You know, nobody ever reaches out with that. It's always like, hi, you know, this is whoever, and we have this product. Can you write a review about it or something like that? And it's like, you know, why?
Yeah, no, definitely. And it's that's what I mean. You've got to be out of the box. You've got to think. Yes, it's so true. Like I don't even need to say any more about it. Like it's so true. You've got to think out of the box, because if people if everybody's doing the same thing, it's just gonna get dry and boring. Like you've got to think of different ways of doing things. Like, and I've spoke to people. I've done interviews with people where they've done things like where they've sent out like a hamper. They've found out information about the person, and they've sent out a hamper to that person. Like obviously the agenda of the relationship they want to build can be in the sort of 5 to 6 figure sort of regions, but they're doing things that are different and actually grab the attention of that person. So yeah, you've definitely got to stand out without a doubt.
I was listening to a podcast on digitalmarketer.com has a new podcast out, and I was listening to it, and they were talking about it, and they're like, the internet is like, it's basically like a party, you know, and you're here at the party, you're here to meet people, everybody's, you know, got similar sort of agendas and those types of things. You wouldn't walk up to someone at a party, or if you would, you'd be stupid, and just start selling them something, right? You would, you know, everybody has probably been approached by the guys like, you know, trying to sell you, you know, get you to use them for as the realtor or that type of thing. You don't just come right out and say, hey, I'm a realtor, would you like to work with me, right? It's like, no, right? And same thing applies on the internet. Like, you want to build, you know, genuine relationships with people before you start asking for stuff.
No, it's the foundations, man. It's the foundations, without a
Yep,
doubt.
that's right.
Okay. All right, then. This question's a bit of a doozy, but like, out of everything you've learned to date, what would you say has had the biggest impact on generating results within the business?
Out of everything that I've learned today, to date, I think what we talked about earlier about dipping your toe into different things, seeing what works, and then building on that, that's at the core of all the things that I've done that's been successful.
That's good. That's so good that we can re-emphasize that because
I think you have to be strategic. You don't want to get overwhelmed, but you know you need to try different things, see what works, and then double down and triple down on those things. And then I think what goes hand in hand with that is having a plan and having regular check-ins. Like my business partner and I, we meet every Monday. We talk about what we're going to be doing in the coming week and what we accomplished in the last week. And then, you know, once every other month or so, we talk about long-term, like what is the business? What are we going to be focused on for the next 6 months to a year? How does that fit into the whole big picture of what we're looking to do? So you need to have those regular meetings. And I can tell you from experience, just having those structured check-ins, even though we sit right beside each other in our office, you know, it forces things out into the open that wouldn't be there otherwise and helps you resolve them before they build up into to something that's bigger than it should be.
Okay. That's cool. That makes me want to dig a little bit deeper because one thing that – I guess this is an issue that we're having, I guess, is that we're at a certain level and we are growing month for month. But we're wondering, like, can we continue to maintain this growth? We get the – there's fears, if you know what I'm saying, of can we continue to maintain this growth? If we don't continue this growth, what about churn and so on and so forth? And how would you look at that and in regards to like the planning and making sure that you sort of position yourself the best you can, because you never know what's going to happen. So just positioning yourself the best you can to really sort of grow and take and hack that growth so you take it to that next level.
Right. So the first thing that I would say is cash is king. So, you know, we always keep minimum 2 months worth of operating expenses in the bank. And that was a big goal for us for a while, was just getting to that point. Right. That was one of our first goals. And using that 2 month cash in the bank as a benchmark helps you. It makes decisions about growth pretty easy, because when you start having more than 2 months, you know, operating expenses in the bank, or it looks, you know, you can look ahead with great confidence and say that you're going to be growing above that level, then you can start hiring and start expanding. And if you're not at that level, then the goal becomes, you know, what do we need to do with our existing resources to get to that level?
That's amazing. Like, you don't even understand how much that is actually. I'm just listening to what you say that, I was like, why haven't we thought of that?
You're right.
Basically at break even.
Yeah, right. Well, I mean, we run at break even too once we get to the, you know, to the 2 month, you know, cash in the bank thing. Mm-hmm. You know, that's the point that we can start, you know, running at break even again, basically.
Yeah.
So you'd be surprised, like, not like if your goal is to run at break even right now, the decision process is going to look similar, you know, when you have, but you just have 2 months cash in the bank. So, you know, and that's important because, you know, you don't want to be in a position where the business goes out of business and it's a successful business that goes out of business. And that happens surprisingly a lot of times. I mean, way more than you would think because of just cash flow management issues. Right. And then the other thing is you don't know. And so if you have a couple down months or whatever, you don't want to have to start laying people off and that type of thing. So that's one thing. The second thing I would say is you need to have a 6 month plan, right? Of, okay, where are we going in the next 6 months? And then your weekly meetings should be on judging the progress of, you know, are you moving towards that or not? And that's from a product development standpoint, from a revenue growth standpoint, and from a profitability standpoint, if you're at that level, right? So what do you need to be doing for the next 6 months? And then don't focus on anything besides those things. Like, both Steve Jobs and Warren Buffett have harped a lot on, you're defined way more by what you don't do than what you do. So you need to be saying no a lot. And this is especially important for a growing small business, because way too often entrepreneurs make the mistake because it was so hard in the beginning to get anything to work. But once things start working, you know, opportunities are like buses. There's always another one coming. And if you try and take every bus, it's just not going to happen. You're not going to commit to anything. Mm-hmm. So you really need to decide what's most important for the business. you know, over the next 6 months, and that's what you should focus on. You know, don't take other opportunities, that type of thing. And that's not to say if 2 months into it you realize, hey, this just isn't working, we made the wrong call, that you don't change course. That's not what I'm saying. But as long as you're making incremental progress towards your 6 month goal, you should continue to focus on that.
Definitely. Okay. So gonna start running this up now. So just gonna ask some sort of like quick fire questions. Like, what does a typical day look like for yourself, Dave?
So I try to get into the office by 8 and leave around 6. So that's kind of my work day. And, mm-hmm. you know, we're at the desk pretty much all day. And I always try to do my most important things in the morning, and that's working with our employees. So I meet with each of our staff, right, which right now it's 3 full-time staff, at least on the writing side, which is who I meet with every day. And then we have a couple marketing people that my business partner works with. But I meet with our writing staff every single day to go over – you know, what they wrote about the day before. I'm the editor, so I, you know, read over and edit that stuff, talk about big picture, talk about what they're going to be working on the next day. So that's my morning. Then things like responding to customer reader emails, comments on the website, mm-hmm. you know, that type of thing. And then the afternoon is really focused on normally meetings and those types of things with outside people, mm-hmm. And then also project-based work. So, for example, we're hiring a new marketing person. One of the things my business partner and I are going to be talking about on Monday, I mean, we have a good idea from a 30,000-foot level of what we need this person to do, but we're going to be talking about very specific, you know, at the 10-foot level, exactly what we want her to accomplish in the first 3 to 6 months. And so I'm working on that in the afternoons right now, putting down all my thoughts, doing some research on that. So when she starts next week, we'll be ready. So those types of projects where I'm actually – you know, doing the work and not managing other people.
Excellent. Okay. And I guess that leads nicely into outside of your work time, what do you do in your spare time?
So I have a seven month old son, and wife, so small family. And so Basically spend time with them, mm-hmm. and try not to lose all of my friends that I had before I had a family. So, you know, socializing with them, both, you know, other couples and friends that I have, you know, friends around, spending time with them.
Good stuff. And what would you say, what do you say drives you to keep going, and what do you enjoy most about what you do?
I think what I enjoy most is taking something from nothing and then building it up and seeing very directly the results of the work that I've done, and the team, right? And mm-hmm. so working with others towards that shared goal. And seeing the results of that in real time with no filter. If you work for a big corporation, you know, you're on a team, you may get to see the results, but oftentimes, you know, it's filtered results because as things get run up the chain, they get changed from, you know, the way they were. So if we launch something, it's basically my business partner and I, you know, making the final decision, so we don't have to worry about things getting filtered out and not getting to see 100% of the work the team has done put out into the market.
Okay, excellent. And I guess any like parting advice for like our listeners on just anything that you think that we may have missed or you think would be useful to people?
Yeah, I would say, you know, take a page out of Nike's book and just do it. You know what I mean? You need to get started. You're going to make mistakes, you know, probably, you know, tons of mistakes. So the big thing is try to avoid the really big mistakes, and then just keep putting one foot in front of the other. It's a slog. And Paul Graham, who founded Y Combinator, is the most successful, you know, accelerator in the country here in the U.S. Mm-hmm. He said the biggest thing he would have thought when he started that accelerator, that it would have been intelligence that would have been the big differentiator between the entrepreneurs that make it and the ones that don't. And he said he can say without hesitation, after seeing hundreds of startups, that it's absolutely grit and the willingness to just keep going that separates the successful from the unsuccessful. So make sure you have that grit.
Well, that's amazing. That makes me feel confident because I know I'm about this. Okay, and for people wanting to know more about you, your business, what you guys are doing, what you've got coming up, and wanting to keep up to date with you, how do they do that? Like, give me like a Twitter handle, obviously.
Sure. So fitsmallbusiness.com, fitsmallbusiness.com, Twitter at David Waring, WARING, and my email is dwaring@fitsmallbusiness.com.
Cool, great stuff. So I'll link all of that up in on the show notes and stuff like that once I publish this out.
Awesome.
Dave, thanks so much for coming on today. It has been really good. I've got some great insights. I know the audience is going to love it, and I will speak to you again soon.
Thanks a lot, Mark. Thanks for having me. Really enjoyed it.
Great stuff. All right, Ninja Outreach people, you take care, and I'll speak to everybody soon. Until the next episode.